Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Welcome to Primetime Crime Podcast. I am your host, Kylie, and in this podcast, we are going to deep dive into some lesser-known unsolved true crime cases, from missing persons to unsolved homicides. This is the place where we are going to unpack it all, research it all, talk about it all, and try to bring justice to these families after all of these years. We are going to take it one story at a time, one case at a time, and hopefully justice will be ours.
Hello, this is Michelle, the host of Haunted Moonlight, a Podmoth Network podcast. If you are like me and enjoy anything and everything spooky, then this podcast is for you. New episodes drop every Sunday and are available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Audible, and iHeartRadio. Can't wait to keep it spooky with you.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us in another episode.
Yeah, thanks for checking us out and hanging out with us.
Yeah. What story do you have for us today, Declan?
So I'm going to be talking about the story that inspired the movie The Exorcism, which is Roland Doe.
The Exorcism or The Exorcist?
Fuck,
are you talking about the 1980s, late 70s movie? I think it's The Exorcist.
I think it's The Exorcist, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Let me double check. Yes, The Exorcist.
Okay.
So I think they redid it recently.
Could be. Have you seen the original?
I don't think I've seen the original. I think I've just seen the remake. Let me double check though.
I have never seen the original, and I don't think I need to see it.
It's a pretty creepy movie, but I'll talk about everything that happens in today's episode.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So you'll get the summary. You don't need to watch it.
Right. Except in the movie, I think it's a girl that's possessed.
Yeah, it is a girl.
Which I think is weird that they went that route. But
I don't know. This case was fairly hard to find. So yeah, we'll see. What are you talking about?
I am going to be telling you, I'm going to do something weird and a little different this week and next week. I'm going to be doing two stories that stand alone, but there's a connection between them.
Okay.
So it's kind of a two-parter, but not really, because you can listen to one story. You can listen to either story without knowing the details of the other, because they're separate people and they're standalone, but it's a family. So
okay,
yeah.
Like a dad serial killer and a son serial killer.
No.
Okay,
we'll get into it. But my drink to go along with this is the Yosemite cocktail, and because it actually it's a factor in both stories. We'll get into that. But the Yosemite cocktail ingredients are 3 sprigs of mint, 1/4 of an apple sliced, 2 ounces of rum, 3/4 of an ounce of lime juice, 3/4 of an ounce of simple syrup. Although the directions said to make it 3-1, which is an extra rich. And that almost makes it as thick as like molasses on a cold day. It's thick. It's real thick. And a splash of chilled soda water. The garnish, if you're doing a garnish, is a thin slice of apple and a mint sprig. So the steps are to add the mint and an apple in a shaker and muddle well. Then add your ice, rum, lime juice, and simple syrup. Shake well and then strain into an ice-filled glass and top with your splash of soda water and garnish. So, are you ready?
I am ready, and I just got a soda stream, so I got plain soda water this time.
Yay! Nice. Okay. I know I dissed on the extra rich simple syrup, but I really like it. And this is a rum drink, and I don't like rum, but I really like this drink.
It's still a little too sweet for me. Rum itself is pretty sweet. I just used, what's that? It starts with a C, the brand of rum. It's like
Captain Morgan.
Crustacean.
No. Station?
I don't. Something like that. Shit.
Oh, Cruzan?
It's cheap. Cruzan, yeah.
Okay.
It's like a cheap rum that I used. So it's pretty sweet, but it's not bad. I'd finish it. I wouldn't order it again.
I'm finishing this. I apologize. Are you ordering it again? Yeah, I would order it again.
Okay.
And I apologize now if I start slurring by the end of this episode because I really like this drink and I foresee me finishing it before we're done.
Yeah. If you guys don't know, we record multiple episodes at once. So if I'm slurring as well, then blame it on last week.
Yeah. Good news is last week I didn't drink my drink because it was garbage. So I'm starting off fresh, but we're good. So, because this is kind of a two-parter, but not a two-parter, I didn't feel like I could tell one story without telling the other because they're both really interesting, both brutal. So you're going to get two brutal stories from me in a row. Not that it matters or anybody's tracking that shit. I'm tracking it because I can't remember what I said last week to this week to next week. So. Anyway, if you're wondering what the hell I'm talking about, we'll get into it. These stories I'm about to tell you are two brothers in the Stainer family. And basically, you could think of it as a family with some pretty shitty bad luck.
Okay.
The brothers are Stephen and Carrie. This week, I'm going to be talking about Stephen. So Stephen Gregory Stainer was born April 18th, 1965, to parents Delbert and Kay Stainer in Merced, California. He was the third of five children with three sisters and an older brother, Carrie. Next week is when I'm going to talk about Carrie. Carrie gets his own episode, and if some people might know who Carrie Stainer is, we're going to talk about that next week. But this week, let's get back to Stephen. So on December 4th, 1972, Stephen was 7 years old. He was walking home from school all by himself, which that really shows something back in the day. 1972, a 7-year-old could walk home from school by himself.
Look at my day. I used to walk home with no shoes and go over the mountain.
Both ways in the snow. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, 7-year-olds don't typically walk home from school by themselves these days.
No.
No. On his route, Stephen was approached by a man, Irvin Murphy. Murphy was described as a naive and trusting man. In this case, it seems that Murphy placed his trust in a coworker named Kenneth Parnell, who claimed to be an aspiring minister. Both men worked at the resort in Yosemite National Park. Ding, ding, that's why I brought the drink. When Murphy contacted Stephen, he was passing out religious flyers and asking for donations. Murphy asked Stephen if his mother would donate something to the church, and Stephen said that she would. Seven-year-old. Don't talk to seven-year-olds, but I mean, this whole story is like...
I can want to.
Red flags. I know, right?
Seven-year-olds are annoying.
Bad people, as the story will reflect. Bad people talk to seven-year-olds. So Stephen agreed to take Murphy to his home, and he willingly got into the vehicle driven by Kenneth Parnell, the fake minister. Instead of taking Stephen home, though, Parnell drove him to his own cabin in a nearby town. And, of course, bad things happen there, which is why this is part of the brutal story. Sexual assaults started soon after that because bad people take small children and do bad things to them. I mean,
I'd rather have a unsolved story than I did a couple unsolved stories in a row. You're doing some fucking nasty shit.
I know.
I don't like this story and so I'm, far, and we're 2 minutes in.
I know. And I'm not going to go into detail because I'm not. I don't want to listen to that shit either. And I don't want to know bad things.
Okay.
And I already know a few bad things, and that's enough for me. Needless to say, bad stuff happened. Parnell convinced Stephen, this is also a horrible part of the story, that this predator convinced this seven-year-old boy that his parents didn't want him anymore because they had too many children. I mean,
I might tap out on this story early. I don't know. We'll see.
I'm not going into detail. I'm glossing over it because I can't handle it either. So Parnell, this dirtbag, he claimed that he had gone to court and had been given legal custody of Stephen, and he changed his name to Dennis Parnell. He allowed Stephen to keep his real date of birth and his middle name. Parnell started raising Stephen as his own child, moving to different cities across California and enrolling him in schools, which is really unique when you think about the fact that this is a stolen child and he's putting him in public school. But he brainwashed him into thinking
it's
that...
It's risky as fuck, yeah.
For sure. Throughout the years, the sexual abuse continued. Stephen wasn't physically restrained, and he was allowed to be at home by himself while Parnell worked at different jobs. He was given a fair amount of freedom to come and go as he pleased, and he was allowed to drink alcohol at a young age. I don't know what that young age was, but it was young. When Stephen was 9 years old, a woman named Barbara Mathias moved into the home. Unfortunately, the abuse continued, and she participated in it until she moved out 18 months later. 1 year, Stephen commented to his school friends that he wished he could go home. So he's having a conversation with them, and he's like, I really want to go home. And they're like, you just live down the road. Okay, let's go home. And he's like, no, like my real home. I want to talk to my mom.
My real parents, yeah.
Right. Well, he just said, I want to talk to my mom kind of thing, and I want to go home. And they were like, let's call her. And he's like, no, because remember, he's brainwashed thinking that his parents didn't want him. Yeah. It's terrible. It's going to get better. I promise. It's going to get better.
So what are the parents doing at this time? Are they still actively looking for him?
Yeah, they're looking for him.
Okay.
But there is no trace of this kid. None. You know, it's 1972. Back then, it was maybe there were milk cartons. I don't even know when the milk carton thing started, but you know, they moved him. Parnell moved him to a different town and enrolled him in school. And, you know, No clue. Nobody knows this kid. He's like, oh, that's Dennis, you know. So when he's telling his friends, I want to go home, they have no idea what he's talking about. They don't know his true background. They don't know about his abduction. They think he's just talking about home that they knew he lived in. Parnell maybe sensing that Stephen was talking to his friends and getting close to telling them, decided that he would move them out of the small town and to a different one. So all of a sudden, their friend is gone after he's talking about, I want to go home. And they're just like, okay, because there's no internet back then. There's no Facebook. You can't write a friend. You don't know where they go. They're gone. And all of a sudden, their friend is gone. And they're like, okay.
The Missing Children Milk Carton Program started in December 1984.
Okay, so a decade later, milk cartons were helping this kid. There was no help for this kid.
I think they stopped, I don't think it lasted that long. I think it stopped in the late 80s, so.
Could be, yeah.
1996, when they, so basically they switched from the milk carton to the Amber system, according to Google.
Okay.
Which,
so as Stephen got older, what's that?
Did we do the Amber Alert system case?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. You might be seeing that coming soon. Up in the next couple episodes, folks.
Okay. As Stephen got older, Parnell started seeking younger children. He tried recruiting Stephen in schemes to abduct another young boy, but Stephen intentionally sabotaged the efforts. Because he's like, I don't want this to happen to another kid, so I'm not going along with it. However, when those plans failed repeatedly, Parnell got assistance from one of Stephen's friends named Randall Poorman. In February 1980, Poorman and Parnell abducted 5-year-old Timothy White in Ukiah, California. Timothy, also called Timmy, did not go willingly, though, and Poorman had to forcefully drag him into Parnell's vehicle. Parnell knew that people would soon be looking for a blonde young boy, so he dyed Timmy's hair brown. He started telling everyone that Timmy was Stephen's younger brother and was named Tommy. Because it worked so well to have one kid out in the open, he's like, no one's going to know if I have another kid out in the open. At this point, Stephen was 14 years old and had lived with Parnell for 7 years.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. He did not want Timmy to suffer the way he had for those freaking 7 years. So 2 weeks after Timmy had been abducted, Stephen waited until Parnell was at his night job. Then the two boys hitchhiked about 40 miles to Ukiah. They went to the police station where the older boy told police, quote, I know my first name is Stephen. Yeah.
That's so fucked up.
It is real fucked up. Yeah. Within a few hours. Good. I know, it's not good. I mean, it's good.
Thanks for
that
sticking around, people.
He rescued Timmy. I mean, God knows what would have happened to Timmy if Stephen hadn't been like, hey, this is not okay. I don't want the same thing to happen. So within a few hours, Parnell was arrested for the kidnappings of both boys who returned to their homes. However, Stephen's return home was a little rough, having gone through so much for such a long time. Obviously. I mean, it's tragic. When he was taken, he was a small child, and when he returned home, he's almost a man. He's almost a full adult. He'd been acting like a full adult. He'd been drinking and smoking and coming and going as he pleased, and now all of a sudden, he's back in his home with his family, who's like, oh my God, our missing child is back, and they want to put him in a bubble, and he's like, I'm not a 7-year-old anymore.
A cigarette.
Yeah, can I have a cigarette and a shot of whiskey, please? You know,
how old is he at this point? Sorry, I think I missed that.
14.
Ooh, 14. Smoking cigarettes at 14. That's, I 14. Guess that's
14.
More common back then, but
yeah, and 14 is a rough age in and of itself. But imagine if you'd just been brainwashed and tortured essentially for 7 fucking years. Yeah,
Jesus Christ,
woof, just awful. So I mean, he had this all these freedoms, but his parents still saw him as the little boy that they had lost 7 years before, and. You know, we're talking about 1980. Therapy wasn't as common of a thing back then, and it was not readily accepted. So after Stephen had had a brief episode of counseling, his father said he doesn't need any more. He's fine. So he didn't get any more
therapy. Therapy didn't really come into play until like 5 years ago.
True.
It was kind of looked at it like a kooky thing up until then.
It was.
Unless you were like,
yeah,
super messed up. But
even
this
then,
kid obviously
I don't think
is
it
super
was
messed
commonplace.
Up. Like, yeah.
I mean, some shit shit went down and he needed some help, but needless to say, he didn't really get it. The circumstances of the entire situation caused a bit of a rift in the family. Not a shock there. Stephen once said he didn't understand why his dad didn't hug him anymore. And he would wonder if he shouldn't have just never come home, if he should have just stayed gone. The relationship between Timmy and Stephen that started in that terrible 2-week period developed into a lifelong bond. The two families remained in contact over the years. With all the media coverage of the incident, Stephen's story was well known, which made school difficult for him. And he got bullied a lot, especially about the abuse that he had endured. So he eventually dropped out of school. And in 1985, when Stephen was 20 years old, he got married to Jody Edmondson. The couple would have 2 children, a daughter, Ashley, and a son, Stephen Jr. 4 years later, Stephen was involved in a hit and run accident on his motorcycle when a vehicle turned in front of him. He sustained fatal head injuries. The driver of the vehicle was later identified, and he served 3 months in jail for hit and run, but he was found not guilty of manslaughter.
Jesus Christ.
How the fuck does that happen? I don't even know. At his funeral, Timmy, who was 14 years old, served as one of the pallbearers. Timmy grew up to give lectures to children about his story, and in 2005, he became a deputy sheriff for LA County. Unfortunately, he died young at the age of 35 from a pulmonary embolism, which is just so tragic. That's that both...
Pulmonary embolism, that's like a stroke?
A clot, right? in the lungs.
Oh, okay. That, so,
yeah.
Not a stroke, but similar...
No. Yeah, but instead of in the brain, it's in the lung. Yeah, super, super tragic. So now I'm going to get into the really irritating part of this case. Parnell, the kidnapper, abuser, and pedophile. You might be asking what happened to him legally, because he was charged with the kidnapping of both Stephen and Timothy. Parnell was never charged with the numerous sexual assaults and rapes against Stephen. The reasons given were absolutely ridiculous. That being, the statute of limitations had passed on some of the assaults, which is dumb. But the other insult to the whole thing is that the county that he was arrested in said that the assaults happened in another jurisdiction, so they weren't going to pursue prosecution, and the other jurisdiction didn't pursue it either. So he was never tried on all of the assault. He was found guilty in 2 separate trials for the kidnappings, but the law at the time only had a maximum of 7 years for kidnapping.
Wait, so what crime had the statute of limitations on it?
At that time, the sexual assaults and the rapes.
So I just did a quick Google search because, I mean, Google has their AI shit, so I'm sure it's wrong, but it says sexual crimes against minors. Many states have no statute of limitations for these crimes. So
this is 1980.
Might have come after the fact. Okay. Yeah.
So, and at that time, the maximum sentence for kidnapping was only 7 years. Yeah.
7 fucking years.
Yeah. And he was sentenced to 7 years, but he only served 5 and was released on parole. So Jesus. 5 years for kidnapping 2 children, and this guy walks after 5. It's infuriating. Parnell wasn't done with being a creep, though. Of course he wasn't. In 2003, when Parnell was 72 years old, he offered... This is awesome. He offered the sister of his caretaker $500 to get him a young boy.
$500?
Yep. $500.
Jesus
Christ. Can you procure me a small child? Thankfully, she knew about his criminal history and she reported it to the police. He was then convicted of human trafficking the following year and sentenced to 25 years to life, but he died from natural causes 4 years later. Statues depicting a young Stephen and Timmy were created and mounted in parks in the hometowns for both men.
So he said he died of natural causes instead of like a fucking prison shank to the neck or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in my opinion, that is natural causes. It is natural to die after someone shanks you because you're a pedophile.
Well, who's that fucking gangster I did a story on?
You've done a few.
That motherfucker.
Whitey?
Whitey Bulger. That motherfucker got beat with a lock and a sock. Like,
ooh. Yeah. Wouldn't hurt my feelings if, well.
That would have been more preferable than cancer or some stupid right. shit that he died from.
Yeah.
From eating fucking commissary food, but.
Yeah. Pretty awful.
They'd be eating like ramen noodles dry in prison, but like.
Right.
I'd prefer him being stabbed with a toothbrush or something. Like.
Yeah. I'm sorry, but.
That was a rough story. I did not like that.
I know. I'm sorry. Next week's the brother, Carrie. And spoiler, he's a serial killer. So
I looked up a little Wikipedia on him and he does not seem like a cool guy.
Nope. But again, I didn't feel like I could tell one story without telling the other because it's so unique to have those circumstances in one family, you know. So how do you tell one story without telling the other?
It's unique, but if I'm surprised there's not more of them. Like if you're raised
100%
in a certain way and like to the point where you become a kidnapper and all the fucked up shit that he did, like I'm surprised there's 100%. Not more people that turn out that way.
Absolutely.
Like
mm-hmm.
I don't know, that guy wasn't a serial killer, but like his brother is, so it doesn't really surprise me.
Yeah.
We need to do an episode on his parents, honestly.
Yeah. I don't know that there's much information to gain about them, but
that's the worst.
Yeah.
I come across so many cool stories like on Instagram, and when I try and look them up, it's like there's zero information about them online, and it's like I can't do a 5-second story about these people that I saw on Instagram. But
I know it's frustrating.
Okay. Let's talk about the Roland Doe exorcism.
Okay.
Yikes. So Roland Doe is a pseudonym given to a child born in a German Lutheran family in 1935 by priest Raymond Bishop. The family lived in Cottage City, Maryland, and this is where the story takes place. Roland was an only child, so when he was bored, he would play with his adult house, like the adults in his house, primarily his aunt Harriet.
Okay.
His aunt was the black sheep of the family. Was the black sheep in a predominantly Lutheran household because she would consider herself a spiritualist, which in layman's terms is someone that believes in ghosts and spirits.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. So you're living with, Lutherans aren't like, I think they're just Christians.
You're asking the wrong person. I'm going to say sure. I don't know. I think it's not, so.
It's not like Catholics where they're super crazy religious.
Yeah.
Not
I don't
like
know.
Mormons. I think Lutherans are Christians.
I think all of them technically are Christians. I just don't know the difference. Your dad would know more. I don't.
Catholics are not Christians. They're a step above. They like.
Well, but they all believe the Bible. In Christ.
Well, yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
That's like a Jesuit. So like people that believe in Jesus are Jesuits and Christian and Catholic, I believe, are Jesuits. I don't know. I don't quote me on this, but
I don't know anything about any of that.
When Roland was a child, his Aunt Harriet passed away, and some strange things began to happen in the house, particularly around Roland.
Okay.
On some occasions, items around the house would seemingly move on their own volition. Vases and other smaller objects would fly across the room or levitate, and Roland's personality would change remarkably.
Yikes. I love a good haunting.
The family contacted their local pastor, Luther Schultz, who was studying parapsychology at the time. And that's basically the study of paranormal activity, basically. Like,
cool.
Yeah. Basically the study of ghosts. But Schultz suggested to the family that Roland stayed at his house for a while so he could see the happenings of Roland for himself and study them, which, given what we know nowadays, I'm not letting my kids stay at a pastor's house.
Right.
That's so damn sure.
I mean, our last story was about a fake minister who did bad things.
Yeah.
Different times.
I'm sure most pastors are good folks, but.
Absolutely. I'll
just keep going.
Moving on.
Yep. Okay. Moving on. Schultz reported that objects in his house would move on their own and levitate in the presence of the boy.
Okay, so the minister is at Roland's house or Roland is at the minister's house?
Roland stayed at the minister's house for a couple days just so that he could observe everything that was going on with the kid.
Okay, so the haunting followed him. It wasn't just in the house.
Just at the house, yeah.
Okay.
Schultz recommended to the family that they seek help from a Catholic priest. So this guy was like, this is too much of a job for me.
I can't do it.
I can't fucking do this shit.
No.
The family took Roland to Edward Hughes, who was a Roman Catholic priest, and an exorcism was performed at the Georgetown University Hospital. During the exorcism, Roland was able to slip his hands out of the wrist restraints and snap one of the springs from under the bed that he was lying on during the exorcism. He used the broken spring to slash priest Edward Hughes' arm, which caused him to bleed profusely, and they ended the exorcism early.
Oh. Okay, wait a second. How old is this child?
So I couldn't find exact age, but between 10 and 14-ish.
Okay.
So like a preteen, basically.
They have him restrained physically restrained.
Yes, and we'll get into why.
Okay.
After the exorcism, Roland woke up one night covered in unexplainable lacerations all over his body, and after examination from his mother, they saw the word Lewis scratched into his skin.
Oh, okay.
Roland's mother was raised in St. Louis, Missouri, and so she thought this was a sign.
Yeah.
The family traveled south and stayed with a family member near St. Louis. While at the family's home, Roland's cousin contacted a bishop at St. Louis University. The bishop contacted a priest nearby, and the two visited the boy together. When they arrived at the home, they were stunned by what they saw. Roland was laying in bed, and objects around him would levitate before flying across the room towards the priests.
Ooh, priest, fun!
Bishop. I don't know if bishop and priest is different, but
again,
yeah.
I don't know.
They had fucking plates and saucers flying out their head and shit.
I love it.
Roland's bed was shaking like an earthquake, and he would randomly speak in a deep, guttural voice, unlike the one his family was familiar with.
Okay.
It didn't say if he was speaking in tongues or not, but I'd imagine he was.
Suddenly speaking
just
Latin.
Just for fun. Yeah.
Like, he doesn't know Latin. We think it's Latin.
He would also react violently to anything, quote-unquote, holy, such as a crucifix or the Bible or holy water. He would react violently whenever he saw it or came in contact with it.
Oh my god.
The two agreed to perform another exorcism at the Alexian Brothers Hospital in South St. Louis. The two contacted a third priest for backup, and his second exorcism was performed. While performing the exorcism, Roland's body became covered in scratches, and the words evil and hell reportedly appeared in scratches on his body.
Oh, so like, my.
Yeah.
Jesus. Oh.
Yeah, fucking terrifying.
I can't even imagine.
During the exorcism, Roland was able to break the nose of one of the priests. However, the exorcism appeared to be successful. Roland healed from his lacerations, and object around him stayed where they were put. So, shit wasn't flying around him anymore.
Yeah.
He didn't have any more random scratches appear on his body at all.
Wow.
And Roland appeared to be a normal kid again.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Two full exorcisms, and
that
goddamn, that's
wild. That's wild.
To be fair, I wouldn't. What?
I was gonna say, did he vomit pea soup like in the movie?
No, I don't. Okay. I didn't see anything like that happening, but
that was a dramatization.
It wouldn't surprise me. I'm sure if you have fucking the words evil and hell scratched into your body randomly, like. Throwing up pea soup is the least of your worries.
Yeah. That's wild.
Yeah.
That's terrifying.
It's such an old story, though, that it's, like, pretty hard to find some good evidence on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can imagine.
I don't know.
That's
super
crazy.
Fucking freaky, though. And it's cool that they based, like, a whole movie off of that. Like,
yeah.
Obviously, they had to dramatize it for Hollywood,
right.
But...
Yeah. That's crazy. That's crazy.
Oh, pretty fucking interesting.
I don't know what I would do if I thought somebody was possessed, and that would be insane. I mean, we've talked a lot about haunted places, but not necessarily. We haven't really. I mean, I think this is our first possession, isn't it?
I think so, because there's been tons of stories of them, but they're like, oh, this guy was exorcised, but like, that's about the whole sum of the story. But this is the first story I found that was like, here's actually what happened, and like, there's proof of him being there and shit like that. So
that is crazy.
Yeah, it's super weird.
Wow.
Thank you.
Do you have a chaser for us today?
I do. So my chaser is, it's like kind of a movie recommendation, but not so. Yeah, because I haven't seen the movie yet. Nosferatu? You know Nosferatu?
Like the original from like the 40s or something?
Yeah, so they remade the movie and it's coming out. It might be out now, actually. I don't know. It's coming out this year in the next couple weeks or something like that. But the creator, Robert Eggers, has personally thanked SpongeBob for introducing younger audiences for Nosferatu for the first time. So one of the best SpongeBob episodes of all time, and I have it like memorized in my brain, is the hash slinging slasher episode. And it's like a horror episode for SpongeBob.
Really?
And I resonated it, like resonated with the episode for a while because I don't know if most people know, but I was a janitor in a downtown Salem, Oregon. And in the episode, SpongeBob has to take the garbage out late at night and he's screaming, running to the garbage can because he's scared of what could attack him. And I resonated with that because I'm like, I'm downtown Salem. There's tweakers around everywhere. I had to fucking run to the garbage can and throw the garbage away and all that. In the middle of the episode, the lights start turning on and off and they reference Nosferatu and they show the old movie, like a cutout where it showed like the Dracula, because it's about vampires. Yeah. So it showed like the Dracula looking guy in the middle of the SpongeBob episode. Mm. And so I would have never known that Nosferatu's an actual movie.
Yeah.
So the creator of the movie personally thanks SpongeBob creators for introducing younger audiences to it, which I thought was cool.
So IMDb says that it's going to be released Wednesday, which would be Christmas, because we were recorded this ahead of Christmas. Shh, don't tell anyone we recorded this ahead of Christmas. Yeah. So interesting. By the time this comes out, the movie will have been out, but chances are you might go see it, but I won't have the time to go see it.
If you go to the movies, you're fucking dumb as shit.
No, I wait for that shit to come out.
You're not dumb as shit, but like, yeah, just wait.
No, I don't care. I'll pay
$2 to rent it for the night. Like,
the only thing,
paying $20 to go see the movie theaters. Last time I was at the movie theaters, I was fucking freaked out. I thought there was going to be a Batman Arkham Knight situation. Some like, because I went with,
when did you go to the movies last?
Last time, like the last time I went to the movies was for the movie Nope by Jordan Peele. It was like an alien movie that wasn't really about aliens. It kind of sucked. Okay. I didn't like it. But there was a guy sitting in front of us and he kept looking back and staring at us. Like, so I couldn't focus on the movie because every time he'd look back, I just like held my knife in my hand and was like staring at him. And I was like, if you do anything froggy, I'm going to fucking jump. So I couldn't focus on the movie the whole time. And after that, I haven't been back to the movie since. I'm like, I'd much rather just watch that shit at home.
The only thing that I will go to the movies for is I will pay all of that extra money and sit and uncomfortable and freeze my ass off in the theater because theaters are always fucking cold. I don't know why. It has to be something that is worthy of the big screen. And the last thing I saw on purpose for that reason was Top Gun 2.
Maverick, or whatever the hell it's called.
So it's good.
Jordan Peele, like, he makes some really good movies. Like, let me look up his...
Visually, it's got to be worth it for me. If it's just a scary story or a weird story, no, I can wait for that to come out and watch it at home.
Well, he did Get Out. Did you guys ever watch Get Out?
can't remember.
He's made some really good shit. He's the latter half of Key and Peele.
Mm-hmm.
He's a short one, yeah.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
He also did Us. Us is a fucking terrifying movie. So I was like,
I think I've seen... Is that the one where the creepy people are in the driveway?
Yeah, and like they're okay. twins. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was gross.
Scary as fuck. Yep. And it was like one of my favorite horror movies. And so I was like, okay, if he's making a movie about aliens, it's got to be good. And it fucking sucked.
Mm. That's a bummer.
It sucked. And I had some fucking weirdo staring at me the whole time. Yeah, it just put a bad taste in my mouth. So I don't go to movies anymore.
I don't blame you.
I'll watch that shit at home.
Yep. Dad wanted to go to something recently, and I was like, no, we can just wait for that to come out.
I'd rather pay the $4 to rent it or $2 whenever it comes out, like on Amazon Prime. Like, I can wait.
Absolutely.
I'm not that. There's plenty of other things to watch to hold me over until the movie comes out for rent. So,
yep. Agreed.
All right. What's your chaser?
My chaser is an Instagram account recommendation. You might have seen it. The account is The Rockstar, but the O and the A are X's. So it's The RXCKSTXR. And he does voiceovers for pet videos. And they are absolutely hilarious. If you've seen a voiceover for a pet video, it's probably this guy. And it's just so good, like where the pet is laying on the floor and acting weird, and he makes up like a storyline of what the pet's reacting to, but it's hilarious. Everything that he's done, I just giggle and laugh about, and so I recommend it. If you haven't seen him, follow him. He's got good shit on there.
I do love those videos of where people like animate their pet's voice. Like,
yeah.
They're pretty funny.
Yeah. I love it because he gets this, like, there's often and like the dog is indignant about what the pet owner is doing or not doing. Like, you didn't help me. And that dog took my stick at the park. It's fantastic. I just love it. So I recommend that. Yeah.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for joining us once again.
Thank you.
This is coming out on New Year's, right?
I believe so. Yes.
Happy New Year's, everybody.
Happy New Year's.
Here's to 2025. Yeah.
Tell all your friends to listen to us. Share us with everyone you know.
Yes, exactly.
Love you, bud.
All right, bye.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.